Knutson, the Senate Chair of Water Issues Task Force. We welcome you here today. We don't quite have our quorum, but we want to go ahead and begin our meeting. So we'll hold off on approval of the minutes at this point. However, Representative LeVar Christensen has asked to be excused, so the record will show that he's excused. Beginning our meeting then today will be Senator Dayton. And she was so gracious to take the assignment to be the chair of her group. And I'm anxiously awaiting to hear how things went.
Can I sit down there so I can see you all?
Would you please? Which seat would you like, the middle chair?
I'm sorry, I forgot my notes. Well, I can see you all better down there, and it's a little easier to have a discussion.
Would you like to have him come and sit next to you? Okay, we're going to have...
as long as I'm on your right.
Whenever you're ready, Senator.
Thank you. I appreciate your patience and indulgence. You know where you're going to have a group discussion? For me, it's just easier to see the whole group. So thank you all. As you recall from the last meeting, there were some of us who were assigned to, I think we call them subcommittees, but I guess they're really working groups because we can't call them subcommittees. So working groups, and I was asked to be on the one dealing with nonprofits. And you were very kind to say that I graciously let out on that. I think I was just being a busybody thinking, nobody's called me, so I'm going to call them and tell them, hey, we need to show up so we can report back. But I've done a lot of review on this and realized that about 4 or 5 years ago, some of the brainiacs in the water community met and reviewed and rewrote basically the nonprofit code. And I mean, it included people like Warren Peterson and Steve Clyde and Dallin Jensen and Jody Williams and Sean Draney and John Mabey. Chris Bramhall, I ask forgiveness if I'm leaving people off here. But it indicated to me that there has been some real specific intense discussion. So the task might be a little more smaller or more manageable than we originally thought. But the effort so far has been in reviewing the existing law and narrowing the task to those sections that deserve some revision. I need to say that I'm just really picking on Steve Clyde, asking him to sit with me, but we could have invited, and I'm sure we would have been willingly accommodated, anybody in this room. All the people in this room care about water, but we were trying to get a small, meaningful work group, so we just took the few of us who were on the committee and asked Steve to be here, and after our initial meeting with him and his explanations to us, a group of water attorneys are working with the subcommittee, or the working group, and the Office of Ledge Research to prepare draft legislation for consideration for the task force. Now, the goal is to have that before you, and it was to have it before you today, but that leads me into a little segue here. We were just having a small group. There were six of us. We were trying to get, I think, six or seven on this working group to meet. We probably set up seven different meeting times, and of those efforts we kept trying to arrange, we finally got one meeting where most of us did meet, not all of us, and we set up a couple more, and we just have not been able to meet. But it kind of led me to realize that there are a number of groups meeting on this very crucial issue of water. And we have those that are legislatively created, which includes the State Water Development Commission. We have this Water Task Force. There's the Department of Natural Resources Executive Task Force. There's the willing group of the Water Coalition that's meeting. And basically, all these meetings, when we come to them, are the same attenders. What we change is who's sitting at the head table or who's conducting. So I have wanted us to consider, just from my frustrated effort here in trying to get us together, I wanted us to consider that perhaps we focus and streamline our efforts by having perhaps fewer assigned meetings. Now, Brian Allred has prepared a chart that he's going to pass out. And if the chairs will indulge me, rather than reporting so much on what our task force has done, I'm going to report on, I'm going to come up with a suggestion on how we can be more effective in our time and effort. And I just have Steve here to kick me if he disagrees or to speak in behalf if he thinks it's a good idea, because I think it gives me credibility if he's sitting here, since he's worked on all these issues. But so everybody in the room here is very involved in these. And what I'm seeing is that we have the State Water Development Commission, which was created in 1994. You can see that from your chart there. It doesn't sunset till 2018. But if you look at the duties there, the very bottom duty says other water issues of statewide importance. Up above it, one of its responsibilities is how the state will fund water projects, which is definitely one of the issues we're discussing here. You go down to the next one, the Water Task Force, which is repealed later this year, but they're tasked, again, when you look at the duties, water development financing. We're talking about the Bear River project, the Lake Powell pipeline, ways to finance loans. Then you look at the Executive Branch Task Force. The Executive Branch Task Force is conducted by the Department of Natural Resources, and really they do not need to be legislatively created. They have their own power to meet, and we don't finance them, and they are asked to be an advisory group. But as I sit on the Natural Resources Commission, I realize that members from the Executive Branch Task Force report to us on water issues, and the coalition group reports to us on issues, and the Water Task Force is supposed to report, and the State Development Water Commission is, that's four different groups reporting to one committee, and it's basically, like I said, mostly the same players. So the significance of the water issue is so intense that almost all these people, all of the players, everyone here in this room, including legislators, weren't being reimbursed for our travel to this or attendance. I mean, people don't want to miss the importance of the discussion, and people take time from their work and their effort to come. And I'm just wondering, just since our little tiny small working group was having such a hard time organizing a meeting, if we as a task force want to consider making a recommendation to the legislature that we not be involved with the Executive Water Task Force, that they can meet as they need to. They certainly don't need to take direction from us, but that's a different branch. That we consider not waiting until 2018 to sunset the Water Development Commission, but fold the tasks of that into the Water Task Force or vice versa, so that when the working group comes to report to the task force and the task force goes on to the legislature, we've had a much more focused and intense time instead of several different efforts trying to meet. Now, I realize that's quite controversial, and that's not quite what you thought I was going to discuss, but thank you for allowing me to present that, since you knew I was going to.
Thank you, Margaret. I know we can always get candor when you're on center stage, and I appreciate that very much. I'd like to ask any member of the task force if they would like to make comment, or let me back up just a little bit. Mr. Clyde, perhaps you would like to speak to this issue before we ask for questions from the commission or the task force.
Thank you, Senator. Just briefly, I agree with Senator Dayton in that there is a good deal of redundancy among these groups. A lot of us do attend all of the meetings. We're paid by clients to do that, to keep track of what's going on, so it's probably less an inconvenience for most of us in the audience than it is for the legislature, who are taking time out of your other affairs to attend these various meetings. But that said, each one of these organizations has had kind of their own niche, the Development Commission looking at water projects, this task force with its narrow charge of financing and looking at the Nonprofit Act. The Executive Task Force has actually, over the last 3 or 4 years, come up with some very good recommended legislation, most of which has been passed by the legislature. And it's a forum that has allowed a lot broader dialogue than the narrow charge of this task force. And the Water Coalition is just an unaffiliated group of interested people, and the composition of that group depends entirely on the issues being discussed. And from year to year, they're either very well attended or sometimes rather sparsely attended if the issues aren't too controversial. But all of them, as the senator says, are well-meaning groups that all have the same goal in mind, and that is furthering the water laws and protecting the water resources of the state. Could there be some efficiency in consolidation? Probably, but I'm not sure which organization ought to fold into to which one and what ought to go away. And I'm not sure I'm wise enough to come up with that. They all, I think, have served their own function fairly well and have been a good sounding board and provided forums. And they do have different people involved and a little different emphasis. And so to some extent, I think what's working here is not so bad to leave it alone. But in terms of legislators and other public officials' time, there clearly is an overlap, and it takes an awful lot of time to attend these meetings. And for those who aren't there as lawyers and others working for clients, it's a little bit more of an imposition for sure. So I see both sides of it, but I'm not sure that there's a real good answer either way on it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. We'll come now to the members of the task force for any questions. Yes. Representative Painter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm the House Chairman of the State Water Development Commission. I'm not prepared to make a motion today, but I think some consolidation might be in order. I've had discussions with Mike Christensen with Ledge Research, and I think that was the direction of his suggestion as well. My comment would be that we all chew on this and let Senator Dayton come up with something a little more specific, and then let's take a look at it at the next meeting. I think it's that would be fine. That would be my suggestion.
Thank you. I think that's good counsel. Are there any other members of our task force that would like to comment on what you heard thus far? Yes, Representative McGiff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that process, Senator Dayton, it would be helpful to us if you come back with something, if we understood up front that you've had input from the other players so that we kind of get a distilled version and awareness of how the feelings are running throughout these groups.
And we do need that, but if I can just comment on one thing. First of all, I do need to say that the executive branch can, they do not need our direction to meet, nor do we have the authority to tell them not to. The Water Coalition are willing people, which are valuable valued voices and valued volunteers. But I'm looking at the water development, the State Water Development Commission, for example. Representative Painter, maybe you can tell me last time you met.
I think we had two meetings last year. We had one right towards the end of the year. I can recall a few of the things. One of the issues that I brought up was the Schofield Lands Transfer Act, where we're fighting with the feds to get those folks their titles to their properties back. And we had that meeting that was held at the Marriott in Provo, and it was in conjunction with another meeting that was going on in the morning. That was the last time we met, was prior to the session, to get an endorsement from the committee to go forward with that federal legislation that we had negotiated with BOR.
And I appreciate that, inasmuch as that is not scheduled to sunset until 2018, and this group that we're meeting in today is scheduled to sunset in 3 months, we have to decide if our discussions are valuable enough that we just might want to fold whatever responsibilities we do not complete or we see for ourselves as a task force, fold them into the State Water Development Commission so they can carry on. Part of the reason is, as I say, the public can meet as they want, but they want to come to our legislative meetings. And if we have a number of meetings that are the same players, just different conductors, we might want to utilize our efforts more effectively. This particularly was brought home as I was trying to organize the subcommittee meeting, and Representative Noel and Representative McKiff, I mean, for them to come up for a two-hour meeting of their own time and effort, that they're, while they're willing, it's very hard for them to schedule. And then I realize the public does want to participate in these, so at bare at the minimum, I would suggest that for next meeting, we can all marinate this idea in our minds, and at the next meeting, we decide how to combine at least the Water Issue Task Force and the State Water Development Commission.
Very good. Thank you very much. Anyone else that would like to speak to this? I don't see any further lights. Yes, we have one. Senator McAdams?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to comment on that, as we marinate on that topic, just I guess a reminder for myself and other members of the task force of the narrow scope that we've been given by the legislature of issues to address, and that's in the legislation that created the task force. But as it relates to nonprofit benefit corporations, it's for us to make recommendations on nonprofit mutual benefit corporations and state statute as they relate to mutual water companies. So that's a very narrow scope. And if we do merge our efforts with other entities, I think it's important for us to remember the narrow scope that we've been given.
Thank you very much. I think it's always important for us to be clear on what our assignment is, and we appreciate you bringing that forth. Thank you. Anyone else? Member of the task force? Seeing none, unless you have further items to report.
I don't appreciate the opportunity for deviation.
Thank you. Mr. Clyde, before you leave, I have a question for you. Did you have anything further you'd like to add at this point?
I think Senator Dayton covered it pretty well in terms of the nonprofit. We have, rather than drafting, have spent time looking through the legislation, the existing nonprofit code. Some of the problems we thought needed changing, we're now finding with a little more careful study, really don't. We think we've narrowed it down to maybe a half dozen sections that could use a little tweaking here and there to address the nonprofit issues. And I would think that by the time this task force next meets, we'll have draft legislation in hand and ready
to
go.
Very good. Appreciate that. Yes, Mr. Finlinson, would you like to make comment? You should be on, but you aren't. We're still not quite. There we go. Now you are on.
On the issue of consolidation, one of the things that the water community felt was pretty good, one of the reasons why we were very willing to support the creation of the Legislative Water Task Force, is it provides an opportunity for legislators, at least those that become on the committee, to be more informed and up to date on the issues facing the water community. And as you look at what you do with those two groups for the future, I think you have more legislative involvement at this level than you had on the Water Development Commission. And however you want to spin that, I think the function of having legislators that become more knowledgeable about the water issues is something that would be better to have that repository in the legislature itself, rather than a commission, a couple of whom are members of the legislature, or in the executive task force will continue to meet as long as you fund it in their budgets. The Water Coalition, the private entities of the water community, will continue to participate so that they can monitor what's going on, as well as being able to give suggestions on the policy that you make. So just that comment in mind. And then the second one, the Water Coalition has created a couple of working groups to deal with both the public finance and the nonprofit. And we've met twice, and we've kept a list of those issues that we think are taken care of in both places, and where we don't think there needs to be any change. And we've identified some areas, as Steve mentioned, that we think maybe deserve additional tweaking. I've made those available to Brian and Tracy, and if it's your desire, then they could have that. And Senator Dayton and also Representative Painter had those copies. But if you wanted your staff to make those kind of working drafts or notes from the working group available, you have them in your system, and that could very well be made available for the whole task force.
Thank you very much, Fred. That's a good suggestion. Before you leave, you shared with me something that had happened today, and if you wouldn't mind sharing that with the body, that would be very good.
I don't see Keith DeNoss here. But this morning, on the construction project for the enclosure of the Murdoch Canal, which is being directed by the Provo River water users and their contractors, Ames, there had an unfortunate accident, and a track hole of sufficient size hit the Jordan Aqueduct. That's a small 72-inch line. If it's full of water, it delivers water from central Utah to the Jordan Valley Treatment Plant and then is available for Jordan Valley and for Metro. It broke that pipe, and it only had 148 pounds of per square inch pressure on the pipe at the point where it broke. It's in probably Senator Dayton's district. It's in north in the Pleasant Grove area. They've been very fortunate in that they've been able to coordinate along the pipe. They've been able to shut the water down. The water that's in the pipe, they were able through luck and skill to put into the old canal structure and then into some of the drainages that come off of that canal. So far, no one has been injured and no property has been damaged. But the operators of the system really performed a miracle in desensitizing or, you know, pulling the plug on that break. It was shooting 10 to 12 inches rocks 40 feet in the air. Was just the pressure that it was coming through. They haven't been able to, the break occurred in a kind of at the bottom of a little siphon, and so all of the water on both sides has got to be drained off through the hole to be able to get down and see what the extent of the damage is. Hopefully they'll be able to have it up and back running by tomorrow morning. Hopefully.
Indeed.
It was a good news, a bad news, good news. It was a serious break.
Yes.
And that's a lot of pressure and a lot of water moving through that. But they've been able to tone it down, shut it off, and they're in process of draining, evaluating, and hopefully they can have it operational again by tomorrow morning.
Well, thank you again for sharing that. Appreciate it. We have Senator Dayton's light on to make further comment.
Thank you, Senator Knutson. I just wanted to thank Mr. Finlinson for the update and let him know that bad things like that don't happen in my district. That would be in Senator Valentine's district. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, we do have a quorum, so we're going to go back to the minutes of the meeting held on July the 19th. Yes, Representative Painter.
Move the minutes of the 19th.
We have a motion to adopt the minutes of the 19th. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Minutes have been approved. All right. Coming back to what we've just been talking about, is there anyone else in the audience that would care to comment on Senator Dayton's report and the comments of Mr. Clyde and others? Seeing none, then we'll continue on with the agenda. going to turn to our staff to give us some background and overview of the Lake Powell pipeline and the Bear River Development Funding.
That'd be me.
That'd be you.
May I change this? Right?
Yes, indeed. Everybody see that fine? Looks like it.
Test. Okay, I think we're on. There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As task force staff, Nathan, Tracy, and I have put together a little bit of background information for the task force on financing and funding the Lake Powell pipeline. We also appreciate collaborating with Rich Ammon from the Office of the Legislative Fiscal Analyst. He's provided his expertise in several of these slides and is here to contribute if needed. As we discussed in the last meeting, the Lake Powell Pipeline Development Act provides that the Board of Water Resources shall construct the Lake Powell Pipeline project as funded by the legislature. Construction of that project may not begin until the board has contracted with the districts, the three districts, for the sale of at least 70% of the water developed by that phase of the project. As we near the completion of that requirement, the Division of Water Resources has encouraged this task force to begin discussing how to finance and fund the project. In order to meet the projected water needs of the conservancy districts, the division estimates that significant expenditures for design engineering will be needed in 2014 and 2015, with the greatest funding needed in 2016 through 2018 for actual construction. I'll briefly outline the proposed timing of the capital expenditures and then review some of the financing options and potential funding sources. While determining how to finance the project is of great importance, no one knows better than you as legislators that the greatest challenge will be finding the funding necessary to support whatever financing mechanism the legislature chooses. After I've completed my presentation, Ron Thompson, district manager of the Washington County Conservancy Water Conservancy District, will outline the projected water needs for the Washington County area and will discuss water payments that may be available to help fund the projects. Please remember that two other water conservancy districts, Kane County and Central Iron County, are participants in the project. I believe they're both represented here today. Certainly, we know that Representative Noel is here on behalf of Kane County. Finally, we've invited our state treasurer to comment on this issue and discuss potential impacts on the state's credit rating. Based on December 2009 estimates made by the Division of Water Resources consultant, the Lake Powell Pipeline capital expenditures will require about $27.5 million in 2014 and 2015 for design engineering and about $370 million in actual construction costs in 2016 through 2018. That's $370 million per year. That's a total of $1.165 billion based on the 2009 estimates. As we've discussed previously, the payments from the water conservancy districts will be received after the funding for the construction is needed. As I mentioned, Mr. Thompson will be addressing the timing and amount of those payments and how they could be used to help fund the project from the Washington County Water Conservancy District standpoint. This slide is intended to show what some of the options or questions are before the legislature as we consider this project. Assuming the answer to the threshold question of whether or not to build a Lake Powell pipeline is yes, the options as to how to finance the project include cash, some sort of debt financing, or a combination of both. In broad terms, debt financing options include GO bonds, revenue bonds, some sort of statewide district revenue bond, a public-private partnership, or some other financing. A GO bond would likely be the least expensive option other than cash. Using a GO bond would raise the issue of impact on the constitutional debt limit and potential competition with bonding for transportation needs. The next few slides after this will be discussing this in more detail. A revenue bond could be considered if, one, the legislature wants to try to get around the constitutional debt limit, and, very importantly, number two, the revenue bond can be structured in a way that it does not count against that limit. This could require constitutional and or statutory changes or judicial decision. A revenue bond would likely not make sense if the legislature does not intend to avoid the constitutional debt limit, since a GO bond would be preferable. in that situation. A statewide local district established to assess a tax or a fee could be created. This district could then issue a bond, and again, debt limit issues would need to be reviewed. In a public-private partnership, the state or water district could contract with a private entity to finance and construct the Lake Powell pipeline. In return, the state or water district would contract to make rental or use payments to the private developer for a period of time. This would likely not count towards the state constitutional debt limit, and certain construction and financing risks might be assumed by the private developer. However, it could result in a higher cost of financing because the private issuer would have a lower credit rating than the state. The state would still have to find a way to make annual payments to the private developer and would be beholden to that developer for the duration of that contract. The toughest question is how to fund the project. Some options include, and there are obviously a range of options, and this is simply to give you some of those, and some of them aren't terribly specific, but one of them is to commit a portion of anticipated sales tax growth, as was done for the transportation projects through Senate Bill 229 in the veto override session. And we'll have a little bit more on that, a table or two on that later. Some sort of tax or fee on water use. And again, these are just general ideas. Payments, the payments from the three water conservancy districts. Some, if you were to create some kind of a statewide district, some kind of a statewide assessment fee or tax by that local district. And then, of course, any myriad of other combinations of taxes or fees that the state could impose. You recall that the Lake Powell pipeline construction schedule required engineering design funding starting in 2014 and construction in 2016. If we assume the use of GO bonds, 15-year maturities, and a conservative interest rate, and if the legislature cash funded the two $27.5 million payments and issued three $370 million bonds, what would the effect be on the constitutional debt limit? Well, this table does not show the effect. This simply shows the current debt projections. The blue line showing the constitutional debt limit, current and projected, the red line being the 85% of that debt limit, and the black line being current bonding obligations, debt obligations, assuming no further bonding in the future. This chart shows issuance of three $370 million bonds in the years 16, 17, and 18. And as you can see right here, if we go back and forth between the two, you can see the effect of that issuance of those bonds on the total debt and how close it is, the distance to the 85% and the constitutional debt limit. Now, once again, this assumes the three water projects, but does not assume any further bonding for transportation. The next slide shows the water projects and some degree of annual highway bonding, as outlined in the on the right side column for those various years. Now, based upon these assumptions, if we issue those $370 million bonds, cash fund the first two payments of $27.5 million, issue 15-year GO bonds, and in those years, 2016, 17, and 18, the estimated debt service is approximately, and these are obviously always estimates, but roughly in the range of $90 to $100 million for that 18-year period. Now, moving to the issue or the potential funding source of sales tax, one of the funding options we discussed is committing a portion of the anticipated sales tax growth, as was done for transportation through Senate Bill 229. This slide shows the projected sales tax revenues. Keep in mind that it's very difficult to make accurate estimates, and assumptions about where the economy is going are obviously key to these numbers. But these are rough projected estimates based upon legislative fiscal analysts' current estimates. Now, this slide assumes that the sales tax collections, as shown on the previous slide, are materialized. And then this chart shows how much revenue could be captured with a 30% earmark on future anticipated sales tax growth, similar to what was done with, again, the transportation funding in Senate Bill 229. To wrap up, Mr. Chairman, some of the issues that the task force and the committee, the legislature has to consider are, first, assuming the Lake Powell pipeline is built, what's the best way to finance the project? And then listed below, and I won't review these, are some of those options and some of the questions and issues and potential problems with each of those. Then what are the funding sources? And then another important issue to consider is what impact this will all have on the state credit rating. And after Mr. Thompson's presentation, the state treasurer will be addressing that along with some other comments. That completes my presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We would consider questions at this point from members of the task force. And if there are none, then we'll just go on with Mr. Thompson's presentation. So I don't see any lights on, and we'll, yes, let's see if we can get your mic on there. Is it on? May have to there we go. We got it on now. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps Mr. Thompson will address this, but my question, relates to the question about creation of a statewide district as a funding vehicle, or a statewide general sales tax increase as a funding vehicle, as opposed to a district created for the benefited area, or a sales tax that's limited to the benefited area. What's the philosophical underpinning for having the state as a whole fund the project?
Mr. Allred, would you care to respond?
Sorry, I didn't get it complete, but I'm wondering, I know that in preparing this, I appreciated the help of Nathan and Rich and Tracy, and Tracy was the one who kind of looked into this issue. I wonder if I might defer to her to address that question.
Tracy, let's get your light on for you.
Okay, so you were asking.
We have several districts, road districts and other districts that are special purpose districts that are created to fund projects that benefit the area defined by the boundaries of the district. And the questions on the board should raise the possibility of a statewide district, which I assume would be the funding vehicle for the project, or the imposition of a general sales tax increase to fund the project, as opposed to something that whose boundaries were defined by the benefited area.
Mm-hmm.
What's the philosophical underpinning of that approach?
Okay, well, if I'm understanding your question right, The state could assess a property tax, and it could go ahead and do that and issue a geo bond that would be subject to the constitutional debt limit. The state could also, increase the sales tax, and that would also be subject to the constitutional debt limit. With the creation of a statewide local district, again, the local district could issue it, if it was authorized to, it could issue a geo bond, and it could assess property taxes across the state as a source. But of course, that would be subject to the voting requirement in the Constitution. But it wouldn't be subject to the constitutional debt limit for the state itself in Section 1 of Article 14. Does that make sense? Am I answering your question right?
Well, not quite. Let's hear from Mr. Thompson and maybe he'll answer.
Okay, thank you. We can do that. We had a couple of other questions. Let's entertain those right now. Mr. Nawal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question on the bonding. You had the numbers there, Brian. What was the rate I missed that. What was the rate you were assuming on the bond?
I believe Rich was at about 4%, 4.5%.
Isn't that a little steep?
But
what is it right now? I mean, let's just today.
Much lower right now. I think that it was done in intent to be conservative and to look at historically in the late 90s about where we were. Certainly, you know, we would hope to do better, but it was a conservative figure.
Okay.
Rich could address that further if you wanted to. That was the estimate that was used.
Mm-hmm. Senator Jenkins.
Thank you. So, Brian, I appreciate this presentation. The question I had, and this goes to Representative McKiff's question a little bit. It appears to me with Washington or the Lake Powell Pipeline Project and the Bear River Pipeline Project and possible dam there, that we have a need in the south of the state and a need in the north and central part of the state. And so in my mind, I really like the idea of a revenue bond or some sort of a statewide district. Actually, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I like the idea of a small tax that is very, very broad on use in some way, shape, or form. And the reason is because our demand to finance water projects, this is not really a single project demand. It's a double project and maybe more as time goes on. And so I really believe, especially after last month's presentation was pretty impressive when you look at how upside down and sideways we've gone to finance water projects in the state. I got to admit, I was pretty impressed with some of the things that we've been able to do. But it also drove home to me the point that we need a new revenue source for water right now in some way, shape, or form. And like I say, I really think it ought to be something that's small but very, very broad that affects all people, because this water is for all of us. And you could argue it's for Washington County only, this one project, which it is mainly. But I view this as something that's also going to benefit the north part of the state when we get the Bear River pipeline and project up there. And that's most of that water is going to end up in Salt Lake Valley, you know, part south. So anyway, that's why I'm making my point here. I appreciate that, and that is the goal I would like to see here, is some sort of a small incremental tax or something that's very broad but very thin. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. McAdams.
Thank you.
Hang on just a second. I got to turn off a few of these lights before we can get your light on. Oops. There we go.
All right, I'm in business. I think Senator Jenkins makes a great point. I would like to actually better understand perhaps how the payers of such a statewide fee would line up with the beneficiaries of the fee. I think if it is in fact something that we can quantify that the state as a whole will benefit, then I think it's justifiable to ask the state as a whole to pay. If it is a benefit for a smaller group of users, or maybe should we look at something maybe more localized? Or maybe there's even a hybrid approach where we're having part of it being a statewide fee because the state will have some of the benefit, but the lion's share of the benefit may be realized more locally, and then can we look at some match where there's a statewide fee and a local match where those who will benefit most directly and most significantly from such development projects pay a greater share than the entire state. So we have somewhat of a user fee approach in that.
Thank you, Senator. And Representative Painter.
Senator, I think maybe to your point, if I think what Senator Jenkins is referring to is And one thing we need to keep in mind, unlike taxing for transportation, we ask all of these water projects to pay it back. We just don't give them the money and then say, there you go, build your products. Here's a grant from the state. I think the spot the state's going to be in is we will be the big brother with that's co-signing or the original issuer. But all of those districts, that when their projects are completed, they're going to have to go to their impact fees, their property tax, and their water rates, and they're going to have to pay the state back. And the beauty of it is all those monies will come back into that fund. And now if the legislature can keep their hands off of it, it'll go to fund more projects. You know, we saw about a $3.5 billion need for this type of funding. Senator Jenkins, if I'm understanding you, is we need to prime the pump a little bit with something to go into these loan funds, and then we will expect everyone to pay this back. I don't think anybody's talking grants here. I think they're talking repayments. So I don't know if that helps your question. I'm happy to throw that out there.
Senator McAdams for a second visit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that is helpful and does make me more comfortable. I would like to see what those, how we can set up that loan fund so that it is not a grant, but is in fact a loan, and some certainty that would be repaid through impact fees. But we're just facilitating what needs to happen anyway. I think that does give me a greater level of comfort. But I'd like to look at what mechanisms we have to, I think, protect that from not only waiving the loan as infrastructure is developed, but also perhaps protecting it as an endowment, maybe so to speak, as we go forward and continue to develop our state's water resources.
Thank you, Senator McAdams. And Mr. Allred would like to comment.
I just wanted to remind the committee, the task force, that the Lake Powell Pipeline Development Act does require for repayment by the Water Conservancy Districts in full. They have terms which extend potentially 50 years after water is delivered, but it does require repayment, and according to terms agreed with the Board of Water Resources. So that is in place. Now, this is not in statute, but one thing that the Division of Water Resources has suggested is that some of the repayments from the Lake Powell Pipeline project could be used to help fund the Bear River development and other things beyond. That's certainly subject to the determination of the legislature, but repayments are required in full from the districts prior to title being, that's one of the requirements, not the only, but one of the requirements for transferring title to the districts is repayment of those costs.
Senator Jenkins again.
Thank you. I just want to Brian's comment that he just made, I agree with that, Brian, but we have a need that's coming on quite fast. I was a little impressed when we sat down last month and went through this. It's actually coming on a little faster than I had anticipated. And when you start talking about repayments of loans that are 50 years out and how they'll impact the next project, well, in my mind, they were so far apart that I really don't see a correlation that's going to be real close between those two projects. By the time we get to a point where Lake Powell is going to start making substantial payments in there that could maybe fund the other project, I felt like they were too far apart first. And secondly, we always have need of bonding capacity in the state. And I hate to always be right there at the top limit. It just really bothers me. And so just out of principle, I felt like it was maybe time for an infusion of some manner, and I wanted to look at the possibility of something that was very broad that wouldn't affect us all very much but would help bolster those funds.
Well, you could tax the rich. They're not paying their fair share of taxes. That's why I'm hearing on the radio and TV all the time. I'm just being facetious. I think we're ready, Mr. Thompson, to move on with your presentation.
I was thinking back. I remember being a county attorney with Kay clear back in the 70s. He's a little older than I, but not a lot. And when I came to Washington County, there were just barely over 10,000 people. And shortly after I left the county attorney, I was asked to come to the district to, and there was a concern about where water was going to come because they had grown. They were about 18 or 19,000 people in the early 1980s. And to get that in perspective, today there's over 140,000 full-time residents and about another 45,000 that come there in the winter that we call snowbirds that have second homes there. And as we put our first project together, which is the Quail Creek project, it was an incredibly interesting experience because didn't have a big tax base, and but for the help of the state on that project and some bonding that occurred to facilitate it, Quail Creek would not have been built. And we've gone from that very small population to, and the loan, I think it was an $18 million loan at the time, and it had 50 years and a varying payment. For several years, we only paid interest at a very low rate. But, and there are always the naysayers that we don't need it and we can't pay for it. But, in fact, we had one community say they'd never use any water out of it until about the year 2000. Well, by 2000, that community was using about 25 million gallons a day out of that facility. But the population had grown, and I've often thought, what if we wouldn't have built that project? What would Washington County look like today? Because there wasn't a water resource without that big reservoir and the ones we built subsequent to support even close the population base. And a few years ago, we hired an economist just to get a feel for what was the economic impact to that one big reservoir project funded by the state. And it was literally in the billions of dollars. You know, you think about a population being supported really by a project going from 20,000 to winter population 180,000, and the jobs and the sales tax revenue and the property tax revenue, and not only the state get all their money back for that investment, but have reaped in terms of return to the tax and general fund many times. I would suspect they, if you really gave proper allocation, they nearly reap what they invest in that project every year back in revenues generated, which could not be generated but for that facility. I was at some meetings just recently in National Water, and the dilemma of what to do with water infrastructure isn't unique to Utah. It's all over the country, and particularly in the West. And many states are now funding and have funded for some time state projects. We happen to be in Colorado where they're looking at projects and a state bond of over $6 billion to fund some of their Wasatch or their Front Range projects. And you see that in the states west of us of billions of dollars being going into water infrastructure. But as a practical matter, however you cut it, the water infrastructure of this state and every state and of every civilization is really its lifeline. Without it, society can't sustain itself, can't grow. Those who have lost that infrastructure have ultimately disappeared. So it's a daunting task, I think, that all of us have in trying to meet those infrastructure needs. And you have really two issues. How do you meet the growth of the future, which is what you're dealing with, and how do you deal with the aging infrastructure problem? Because as you really think about it, if our population in the state doubles over the next 20, 25 years, you've got to replace what we took 150 plus years to build. You've got to keep that modern and replace it 100% to meet the needs that guarantee people a future in the state. These state projects are a portion of that. The difficulty that comes with any small unit is that the cheap projects have all been built. And so the cost of new water is much different than what we're used to historically. Yet I've always believed and still do believe that when it comes to water for base needs, particularly municipal water, that the demand curve is fairly inelastic. People pay what they have to pay to have a water resource, and you can see that as you go through the West and varying water rates, as people pay what they have to get the basic needs, and we all can understand that. So certainly we have the task of how do we finance this, The state, we have many projects in the state that could not have been built, even by small districts like we were and are, without the help of the state to get started, to get that over that hump to where the project came into more full utilization. Today, out of our Quail Creek project, we're delivering 30-plus million gallons a day of water. We have put a regional network where we've tied our communities from the far east side to the far west side with distribution and transmission lines, so we seamlessly move water back and forth to those communities. Now, I'm going to go a little bit different because we've changed. Our district does business quite a little bit different than some of our other big water districts, and I want to talk about that. But Brian, I'm going to impose on you to move these slides through, if you would, for me. As we look at Washington County and our projected growth, and the red line is the growth that gets us to about 2020, you'll see that we start running into some water deficits in our existing system sometime between 2017 and 2020. Now, on our particular district, we have a very large groundwater basin that we've been recharging and continue to recharge that will cover that deficit. But if you could go to the next slide, Brian. This kind of shows you a longer term of where Lake Powell is the big, I call that pink. I'm not sure what other people call it. That's the Lake Powell pipeline. See, there's several projects that have to come in to get us to that 2020. But you'll also see that Lake Powell, as we start moving, if we double our population or meet what the Governor's Office of Planning Budget says we'll grow to, we will have used the first 70,000 acre foot out of the Lake Powell project, completely be using it before 2040 and probably somewhere around 2030 to 2036. Can I have the next slide? And this kind of puts it in a little more perspective. You'll see that early in the years we have a large surplus of water available, but as we move to the late 2030s, we start moving back into a deficit. Now, the pipeline has some other potential to augment it, and certainly as some of the players may or may not use all that water resource, we think that it may be available for Washington County. If I could have the next, you've heard this one, so I'm going to skip this slide, but it's what essentially is in the act. Now, I want to talk about what we've done in our district. This is about how we think we'll have to take down the water. Now, traditionally, water districts in Utah, and we had for a long time, funded water with take-or-pay contracts. So if we had a city that wanted a block of water, they would buy a big block of water, and then they would pay us every year whether they use it or not. That works well until you get a big community and you have one or two rich cities that can afford to take all your water and some who can't afford to take any. And we found ourselves in about 6 or 7 years ago in a dilemma where we were finishing a big pipeline project that interconnected from Ivins through Hurricane our water facilities to these cities and start talking about, and they were all essentially out of water. And we started talking, well, how are we going to allocate this? And we had one city who came in and said, well, we want everything you have as surplus, and we'll pay for it now with a water contract. And that's certainly alluring. But as you looked at where the needs were going to occur, we made a decision that we were going to change how we did business. The other thing we found is we sell these big blocks of water to the city, then we're out encouraging people to use water more efficiently and to conserve water and to the wise use of it. Well, that's a little tough on a city when you're out there every day saying, water less, water at night, don't use as much water, and they're having to pay this big water bill to you, and they're dependent on revenue. So there's always this little clash. And so we decided we were going to see if we couldn't change that paradigm. And working with the cities, we came up with what we called a regional water supply contract. The net effect is that our population base from Virgin through Ivins is entered into what we call a regional water supply agreement, where the district becomes their wholesale water supplier. We changed several things in that. First of all, that the contract required the cities to buy into our capital facilities plan and approve it. So it's not just the district's plan. It's approved by city councils and mayors as we move forward. Then there are several components, Margaret.
Yes, I'm sorry.
There in the bottom, would you tell me what that is? I can't read it from here. You've gotten those dates, and I'm assuming those are dates down there along the bottom left.
It starts at 2019. 2020 and it ends at 2032.
Okay,
us.
So it starts at 2020. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And I'll kind of tie how that slide particularly ties back in at the end of this discussion. Anyway, out of that agreement, we essentially pool the water resources, where the cities could take as much or little water from the district depending on the year as they wanted. They pay for the water they actually take. They pay O&M and repair and replacement costs. There is a, to guarantee that we had the ability to go into the markets for, you know, as you build PAL, that's the raw water. You still got to build all the treatment plants and distribution, so it has to be other water facilities. But so we put in an impact fee on new development, and that occurs at the earlier of a platting of a lot or the building of a or the obtaining of a building permit, and it's based on equivalent residential units. And we also have a small fee that's a water surcharge fee that could, had we entered into a project that was looking at those impact fees for revenue, the growth stopped, we could still increase that fee to cover our debt service. Out of that, what we've started doing is as lots are platted or building permits, we assess an impact fee and have a capital facilities plan that deals with those issues. It really means for us that as we have demand for growth, we're going to assess a fee on that growth that would provide us a cash flow stream to pay for those blocks of water as we take them down. If, in fact, the growth projected by the state occurs in Washington County, we'll have paid off our proportionate share of this project as we take that last block of water. Now, we certainly appreciate there's a 50-year option out there. Don't think that the Washington County will use the 50 years. Honestly, I'm not going to be there when they get all this done. There's some of us that start getting long in the tooth and may not be here to see this all the way through. But my own view is that this district is set up to pay for those blocks as they take them and pay this project off and meet its other long-term needs in a fairly short time frame. On the other hand, if you were to take the Washington County share of that and say you got to start paying that from day one, our water rates would become so exorbitantly high you just couldn't do the project. We've got to have the state partnership to get us over those first few years to buffer us into this project, much like happened with the Quail Creek project. We have met as the three districts, and I think in principle agreed that as we move in this project, there's got to be a local contribution. I think we've all agreed that the districts, as we move in, need to be prepared if they're going to stay in the project to put at least a 10% upfront cash contribution as we move into it. Certainly, my board and our district have started working on building reserves, so when the time comes, we need to have our proportionate share. We have that available to us. Other cities really haven't. They're not quite structured yet like we are, but we hopefully they'll get on the other districts and move in that same direction. I think if I could leave bottom line, and I know that you guys have forces tugging at you from every direction. And, you know, it's sometimes tough. These water projects take so long to put together anymore, and dealing with the environmental issues and getting them designed and finally getting them funded and built, that it takes sometimes some of them a lifetime to put together. I think of this project, and really we started looking at whether it was even feasible back in the 1990s, and here we are 16 or 17 years later, and we're finally full-blown into the environmental work, but still much to do to really bring this project all the way as a project for Washington County. I can say that if you go back and look at those charts, it's pretty clear in Washington County that if we don't put a significant source, there really isn't much future in that county for additional growth or for that economy long-term to survive. It will become a very bleak place for people raising families down there. You just have to have an adequate supply of water to keep that economy vibrant, as we do throughout Utah. And you've heard me many times say that the most important lubricant of a economy is water. I've never changed my mind. I think it's crystal clear that without an adequate water resource, the rest really doesn't matter. I'll be glad to entertain your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Are there any questions at this point? We do have a light on. Senator Jenkins?
Sure, Mr. Thompson, I appreciate your comments today, but you've taken a very simple view of this in my mind. Basically, you say you're just going to go to the state and we'll back your loan up and you'll take care of it. Well, my view here is our bonding capacity and where we're at, I'm not sure we're going to be there when you come on the day you want it. That is part of the point I'm making here today, is the fact that we all assume we'll be there, but we have lots of other infrastructure needs all the time. We keep bonding for roads, and these two are going to be in conflict with each other on a regular basis. Plus, from presentations we've had in the past, Mr. Chairs, you guys have been there, I have a desire to commit and get that Lake Powell water on the way to make sure it's there when we want it. You know, we're right on the tail end of the stream right now, and we're right to the point where everybody's drying up, and I have a desire to get this committed and on its way and get going so that when, in fact, you need it, they don't say, oh, guess what, we're going to be 10% short or 50% short, or now you can't get everything you want because we've over-allocated, or we've decided that the Indian nations need more of it, or, I mean, you know, there's a million different things down there. So I appreciate your presentation here, and it's a good one, and you've certainly stated your point. How are we going to finance this?
Well, I obviously have to look at the past to try to understand the future. I can tell you my experience has been when there's been a big, good water project, the state has always been found a way to find the money. Now, that being said, when we looked at the Bear River and the Lake Powell project several years ago during Governor Walker's tenure, one of the concepts, and I really think it still has tremendous merit, is that we ought to have some sort of a critical infrastructure fund in this state, and every time there's surplus, a portion of that ought to be set aside. So we're not looking at borrowing every dime, that we have some money being allocated to meet these long-term critical needs. If you don't take some of the money off the table, I realize it's very easy in all of our organizations to take surplus and build them into your baseline budget. I think it's poor public policy, but I think that's where the tendency is to do that. So I remember one of the senators on the committee says, what we really ought to do is every time there's a surplus, we ought to take a quarter or half of it and put aside in a infrastructure fund that would fund these state projects. I still think that's sound policy. You know, I'm going to be the last guy that says we ought to raise taxes in an economy that we're in. On the other hand, hopefully we're not going to be in this kind of economy forever. I can say if there's anything Utah could use right now to keep our people working, is we need some of these projects that you could move to fruition. It's too bad that you take a project like this and it takes decades just to get your environmental permits and all the things put together, but that's kind of the climate we're in today.
Mr. McGiff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm supportive of the fundamental concept that the state's involved in the development of water projects that serve the people. But the question I earlier asked, boiled to its simplest form, is to what extent should the people in Logan pay for a pipeline project to serve the extreme southern end of the state? There are statewide benefits derived from projects, and I understand that. And by way of contrast, we put some state money into the expansion of the airport. And we did so in the end, I believe, by assuming that that would have a regional benefit beyond just the immediate valley. Does that same concept apply to this water project, and to what extent? To what extent should it be a state project, or should it just facilitate the project with a payback mechanism, which Chairman Painter discussed, that requires that those who receive that water pay for that water in some revolving loan kind of a project? But you're suggesting that that won't do it because you can't afford on the front end. You've got to have subsidization to make it work. Is that what
I really think what I'm saying is, I think the principal has to be all repaid. I absolutely agree with that. It's the carrying of that over the period of whatever time the state sets. I think they need to recoup 100% of their capital cost. There's those first few years as that water starts going into use and you start producing revenue, that there's just not the revenue to cover the full debt service of those kind of loans. It just can't work. They're too big. And that's where I'm not proposing that there's a subsidy in principle. I don't think there should be. But there would be a subsidy in terms of interest rate, and the bigger subsidy is the state would hold the paper. They ultimately get all their money back. They may not get it back in 15 years as you bond, but maybe they get it back over 30 or 40 or 50 years. I think in our case, you'll recoup what our costs are much quicker than that. So the other two smaller districts, they're going to need the full 50 years. But, you know, what's the old saying, that a rising water raises all boats on the lake, not just one? You know, in a district like ours, we're a microcosm, but we have some communities who don't get as much direct benefit. But it's interesting. All their kids go to college. They shop there. They all work there. So they really still get the benefit. And that's really true. And I've always believed that every time you create a job in rural Utah, you really create another job on the Wasatch Front. I think that's probably true.
There's a corollary that goes along with that: rising tide lifts all boats. And the corollary is, except in some circumstances, it swamps some boats. Raises some, but swamps others.
Thank you very much for the great questions and the responses. I don't see any further lights, Mr. Thompson, so we're going to move on then to the state treasurer, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. Richard Ellis, State Treasurer. I apologize. I've not been able to attend your other meetings. I've gone back and listened over the audio on that to get up to speed. And I want to address one issue before I get into the state's credit rating. And I know you've had discussions about credit enhancement and how we might be able to provide some type of a moral obligation or guarantee to these water districts and what they're doing. The fact of the matter is that the best we could probably give them is a rating equal to or less than what they currently have for the big water districts, Washington County, Jordan Valley, Weber Basin, Central Utah. So there's not a lot of juice that we can provide them. I think for smaller districts, that's probably better done through the revolving loan programs we have with Board of Water Resources and DEQ and other areas. So just wanted to touch on that and realize that if we got into that mode, it becomes a contingent liability to the state that at some point the rating agencies do pay attention to. So I think shoring up existing programs and strengthening what we have with revolving loan funds that are meeting the needs of small and medium-sized issuers is probably a better way for us to provide enhancement or subsidy to them. I started my career 26 and a half years ago at Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District, and so I have a soft spot in my heart for water users. Tage Flint, I remember when he was a freshly minted professional engineer out of the University of Utah, and now he's running Weber Basin Water. So I've seen him grow over the years, and Richard Bay has been a friend for 26-plus years. And so I've known these players for many years and understand this industry to some degree. When I came to the state in 1996, we had just, prior to when I got here, issued the largest bond issue in state history. It was, I think, $80 million, primarily to finance the Matheson Courthouse downtown. That was huge for us. To that point, we usually did $20 or $40 million a year. I kid Ed Alter now that in 2.5 years, I have issued over $3 billion of bonds, and I don't think he did that in 28 years of service. So we went from a real debt-averse state to a state that almost is caught up in debt, it seems. Now, not to say that's bad, and we've had needs, and it's been timely in supporting things, but we have taken on a lot of debt in the last 2.5 years. In 2004, Governor Walker, just as she left office, set up a water task force, which Ed Alter chaired, and at the time I was director of the Governor's Office of Planning and Budget, and I was on that task force, as were many in this room, to look at the Lake Powell Pipeline and the Bear River Project. And obviously the immediate thing that came to our attention was there was a mismatch between the need for money to develop the project versus the capacity to take that water. You couldn't incrementally develop capacity. When you build the Lake Powell Pipeline, you have all the water at once. You don't get to bring that on in stages, although your demand comes in over a long period of time, thus forcing us into having to front the money on a statewide basis to be able to do that, which was a recommendation coming out of that task force. And we saw Lake Powell Pipeline legislation put in place, as well as some modifications to the Bear River Pipeline. The state currently has a debt capacity of $4.3 billion. Of that, we have just over $500 million of capacity left. Now, we pay that down, $4.3 billion of capacity. We have outstanding about that number may be a little high, but we have just over $500 million of available capacity. Now, here with Lake Powell Pipeline, we're talking $1.1 billion project, plus Bear River coming sometime after that, which will be several hundred million dollars. Now, the state has very short amortization of its debt and pays that down. We've had a soft cap, as many refer to it, of 85%, not wanting to break through that threshold. Some wonder where that number came from, and it was a number that Ed Alter laid out there saying, we never want to exceed that point of our debt capacity. The reason being, if we have an earthquake here, and if we have to replace the spaghetti bowl down at 21st South, that's going to cost several hundred million dollars, we have flexibility that we could go to the market and begin to rebuild that before we may see money flow from the federal government. And the rating agencies want to see that type of flexibility built into your debt management plan. So that's where that number came from, was 85%, that we didn't want to exceed it. 85% was not laid out there as a place where we could run our debt outstanding at that level. We currently have $1,232 per capita debt burden on the citizens of the state of Utah. A typical AAA state will have about $450 per capita of debt, so we're almost three times a AAA state at the moment. If we take that down to percentage of our debt capacity, we ought to be running at 30%, not at the 87% we're at right now. So what's the implication with regard to the state's rating? The rating agencies are patient with us. They know we have a lot of growth out here in Utah. They know we have great demand for infrastructure, whether it's water, highways, whatever that may be. So as we met with the rating agencies and we talk about our coming needs, we've let them know we have a big authorization, we have a big project. We did this with the Centennial Highway Fund that started back in 1997-98 timeframe. The state issued about $1.2 billion over the course of 3 or 4 years as that was built. And the rating agency saw we built that up, and then we paid that debt down over the next several years. We issued our last debt in 2001. We didn't go back into the market with large debt numbers again until 2009, after we had an authorization of $3.4 billion for highway bonds over the course of two legislative sessions. We've issued just over $3 billion of that. We have a little bit more to go still. Some of that includes some building bonds that was authorized to get to the $3 billion. Our discussions with them is, yeah, we're going to build up, we're going to have a lot of debt, but we'll see that paying down over the coming years without putting on other big projects. So I think as we look at infrastructure within the state and the state's credit rating, we need to understand we need to take a breather from debt issuance in the state for 3 or 4 or 5 years, probably more in the 4 or 5 year range, to get our debt burden down to where it needs to be again before we put another $1.5 billion or $2 billion project. Whether that's for highway or for water, it really doesn't matter. But we have to look at these things in conjunction. If the state is going to step up and help with the Lake Powell Pipeline, we have an obligation to be looking at transportation and highway at the same time. And how do we fit these together? Do we defer any highway construction using debt for 10 years so we can build in room for Lake Powell Pipeline? Or do we look at other options for Lake Powell Pipeline? We've discussed a couple of things here today that may have potential. General obligation bonds obviously will count against our constitutional debt limit. We can't exceed that legally, So we have to stay underneath that. We've seen that limit decrease the last 3 years, and we'll see it decrease again this year as assessed values continue to drop. At some point, that will turn around and we'll start to grow again. But as we've seen assessed value drop, our debt issuance has increased substantially, and we see the charts start to diverge again, but we have to let that peak come off far enough that we don't jeopardize our AAA rating. If we continue to run at 70, 80% of our debt capacity, we most likely will jeopardize that AAA rating, which will be a cost of, say, 25 basis points, a quarter of a percent in terms of higher interest costs going from a AAA to a AA credit.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have printed someplace, or could you share, if we don't incur further debt and if we pay as we go, how rapidly that debt limit looks like? We're about at 88.6 as I compute it, so we're a little above the 85% we projected. How rapidly will that come down?
We're at the point right now where we're paying off about $300 million a year of principal, but next year we'll issue another $300 million of debt, so we'll make no progress next year, finishing off the remaining authorization. The following year we'll have to issue about $100 million of debt and pay off $300 million, so then we'll begin to ratchet it down. But it's going to take, you know, $1 billion will take us 4 years, 3 to 4 years to pay down $1 billion.
Okay, is that the... Sure,
yeah, that's the type chart we're looking at right there, following that black line down. Okay. So where we'd want to see it get down to is somewhere in that billion and a half range.
It peaks out around 14. Is that? I can't see it.
Yeah, it's peaking right in the 2013 range. 2014, we're starting to see it come down a little bit.
Thank you.
We have one more question before you continue. Representative Sagers.
My question is, right now it appears most of this bonding has gone for roads. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you know what our future needs for roads are? I assume that won't decline a great deal.
Well, I'm sure we could spend more money than we have every year on roads.
Okay.
Where the legislature's headed, what they're authorizing, I don't know what that is. You know, we have to look at what we can afford, what we can do on a pay-go basis, and how debt fits into that.
That's a segue into my next question. Right now we're using GO bonding to accomplish this. Is it possibly some type of excise tax revenue bond to fund roads and further free up GO capacity for other projects, i.e. water?
We could do excise tax bonds, which was leading to my next, I was kind of headed with this too. So great segue, Representative Sagers. We can do excise tax bonds, a sales tax revenue bond to do highway bonds. Currently, it appears as if those would be subject to our constitutional debt limit without some type of amendment to the Constitution, or else having to go to the courts to have the courts give us a decision as to whether they thought that fell under the constitutional debt limit. But the two bond council firms in town have given us memos to the effect that they believe it would fall under a constitutional debt limit. The other piece in addition to that, though, even though we get constitutional debt limit capacity, the debt burden on the citizens continues to be the same because it's a tax-supported debt. Whether it's general obligation property tax or whether it's an excise tax, sales tax, it's still a tax burden on the debt. The rating agencies will lump those together as they look at the debt burden upon the citizens of the state. So we don't necessarily gain any capacity in terms of our debt rating and how that may impact us going forward. Does that answer your question, Representative? We've had a couple of things thrown out here as potential things to look at. A statewide water district is something that would take this debt off of the balance sheet of the state. I think there's some policy issues with that that would need to be explored, but it's the type of thing where it goes off of the state's balance sheet. The debt would then be of that statewide agency, who would then have to go get its own rating. That rating would probably be lower than the state's rating, and so there would be a higher cost to it. You'd have to give some type of a taxing authority for them to be able to have a revenue source, because they've got to repay the debt long before we see the revenues coming in from the users to be able to make that happen. I think another option to explore, whether it's feasible or not, I don't know, but is to look at a public-private partnership. We're seeing those happen across the country. We looked at that with the Mountain View Corridor several years ago. It didn't really pencil in that instance. We've seen that segment of the market kind of fade away and come back in different ways. I mean, Chicago has done a public-private partnership with the parking meters downtown to be able to get money. They're doing wastewater plants, water treatment plants across the country where a private developer comes in, builds a facility, operates, maintains it, and then contracts for the water. Is that something feasible or not? I don't know. Is it politically acceptable to the water agencies? Probably not. But I think something to look at with bringing outside capital in and leasing the water from those companies for some period of time and taking over the facilities. But I think it's something to explore. I've had those discussions with legislative staff, and we're trying to pull together a conference call where we can look at that a little bit further and see if it's something we really think might be feasible to bring to the task force. But continuing at the rate we're going, I see impacts to the state's credit rating, whether it's highway bonds or water bonds that are issued. We need to take a hiatus for a few years, or we need to, that's all we can do. Our debt burden is getting extremely high. We need to allow that to pay down a few years before we take on another large project. With that, I'll conclude my presentation and leave it open for any questions.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming, Mr. Treasurer. And unless there's more questions, we'll release you from your captivity. Oh, we have Representative Painter.
Richard, thank you for doing this work on us for us. As far since you brought it up about the public-private partnership, I guess we can assume you're going to take that assignment and look into that for us.
Yep.
I don't know how Ron or Dennis thinks about that, but I don't think we should forego any possible option. I mean, if Richard and I had this conversation earlier, and if we could find somebody that will float a 20-year bond at 3.5% and it doesn't touch our debt limit.
May not be feasible, but we at least need to look at it and check it off that maybe it doesn't work.
As far as I looked at I've made some notes in Brian's presentation with regards to the draws that are going to be required on the St. George project. Next session, we're going to be doing the 2013 budget. If I assume, Brian, we have a $30 million possible draw in 14 and a $30 million one in 15, is that correct? 27.5. Okay, 27.5. I think...
Those are 2009.
Yeah.
From the consultant.
Okay.
And
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if we assume 30 for round numbers, Richard, what year was it that you felt like we'd be closer to being in the black as far as our debt issuance?
I think we're probably looking out to the 2016, 2017 at the early side of being able to maybe tag on a few hundred million dollars of debt.
Okay, I think if I could make this comment, Mr. Chair, I think that next session we're going to be looking at the 2013 budget. The year after, we're going to be doing 2014. And if this is the timetable for that project, I would make this suggestion to this committee. We've either got to fish or cut bait here, and we've got to either say, look, we're going to run legislation that says we're going to take an increase in the sales tax money, not unlike what Senator Adams' bill did for transportation, and say maybe the smart thing to do is try and allocate those $230 million draws within those increases in sales tax. We've either got to do that, or we got to put on a statewide sales tax, or a combination of these. And another question, Mr. Chairman, where we have a whole lot of the Senate that's on executive appropriations, I'll ask this question. Would it be wise that we throw this out to executive appropriations next month just to get it on the radar? You're on in leadership. I'll let you make that call.
Well, I think a reality check is never bad, and that is informing executive appropriations of what is coming and the time frame that we see it coming. I think that would be very good. And I would encourage you to do so.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have, Richard. Thank you very much. It's been very helpful to us.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Thank you. Are there any comments from anyone in the audience on what you've been hearing thus far? That essentially concludes our agenda, and there's only one item left.
Let me make that.
Go ahead.
Since you've all been so faithful in coming in the month of August when everybody goes on vacations, Representative Duckworth has there's a bag of treats. She's been kind of the holder of them. As you all leave, would you grab one on the way out? I found that works very well when I chair Rev and Tax. They show up on time and they're in a better mood. So to commend all of you for showing up, grab you a treat on the way out. And so now, can I make a motion as well?
You may, but before you make that motion, we need to our next meeting.
Okay.
So, Mr. Painter, what do you think? When do you think we should meet again?
Doesn't executive appropriations meet the day before next interim in the afternoon?
It does.
Would right after that be a good time? I would suggest that. I'll throw that out to the group here.
Yeah, that makes sense. Some of us are here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go for that unless we hear something in the contrary.
That would be the
How about 3? Are you done by 3?
When's executive probes over?
2 hours.
Why not?
Yeah, that should work fine.
And Mr. Chairman, could you line us up on the agenda for...
I'll do my best.
I think you can pull that one off and then...
Okay. So, we have a next appearance would be before the Executive Appropriations Committee, and we're then ready for your motion.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank everyone for coming in this August, and I move to adjourn.
Motion is to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.